Welcome to Parents' Perspective. You guys go work it out together. Does this phrase sound familiar? When children have conflicts, we hope they can work cooperatively to solve them. The reality is sometimes very different. With violence and destructive interactions so much a part of today's world, our children often lack good models for conflict resolution. Into this breach has come a new concept, peer mediation, the notion that children can help each other resolve their conflicts successfully. How does it work? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Joining us today are two experts involved in training children in peer mediation skills. Dr. Maxine Cunahan is administrator of a high school for alternative education who has also worked in peer mediation with high school students. She has five daughters. Welcome, Maxine.
Good morning.
Kathy Owen has worked in peer mediation with elementary school, middle school, and senior high school students and presented programs on peer mediation for parents. She is the mother of three children. We're glad to have you with us, Kathy.
Good morning.
Kathy, what is peer mediation and what is it used for?
When people are unable to negotiate and need help, they can turn to a mediator who's a third-party neutral, someone who has no interest in the outcome and, in fact, does not tell the parties, unlike an arbitrator or a judge, what to do. The skill is in helping the people work it out themselves, translating back and forth for them. Peer mediation has come to mean training students. In fact, all mediation is peer mediation. Any mediator is mediating usually with their peers, but it's come to mean at school, meaning that third and fourth and fifth graders mediate for third and fourth and fifth graders.
Maxine, what is the underlying philosophy of peer mediation?
I think that the appeal as well as the philosophy is that we can help ourselves. We can do it ourselves. I don't have to run to mommy. I don't have to run to daddy. I don't have to get the teacher. I don't have to get the principal. We can do this, and we can find a solution to a problem, and we can work it out.
It's very empowering for children.
Absolutely.
Could I just add, much of what our kids hear these days are people telling them what to do. Behind that message, as you tell someone what to do, is, I have to tell you because you can't do it for yourself. And that really undermines their confidence in their ability to make decisions and to take responsibility. And I think that peer mediation is one of the few things that's come along that says to kids, look, we trust you. You can do this yourself. We'll help you with the process and give you a forum in which to work it out. But you can do it. And I have noticed with kids who've gone through mediation that they really have come away thinking, hey, I can do that. And very often we've had kids who've been through mediation who have said afterward, I want to be trained as a mediator because this works. And those are the kids we then try very hard to train, and they go on knowing that they have a skill.
Well, going along with that, what kinds of characteristics do students need to become mediators?
That's an interesting question because we're not looking necessarily for the straight-A students or the student government students. We're looking for kids who are willing to take on a little extra responsibility, who are thoughtful, who have processing skills, who are good listeners. Although, as I say this, you can train almost anyone in these skills. You don't need a particular profile necessarily to make a good mediator. In fact, very often we try to bring in some of the negative leaders, those kids who lead others in school but tend
down
to lead
the
them in
path.
The wrong path, and train them because they are leaders. People listen to them. They understand about conflict. They've been in conflict. They know about it, and they tend to make very good mediators.
Any examples from either one of you on successful peer mediation exercises?
Well, you don't necessarily choose the first person that walks in the door. I know I have a student in my school who spent at least a semester watching other mediations, watching what students were doing. And the only way that I knew that he was going to be a good process person is I heard him make asides to his friends or to me in group meetings, and I realized he was an excellent processor. He really knew what was going on every time. And we recruited him to come and be a mediator. He would not be a natural because he would have never volunteered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it gives kids often who don't have confidence in themselves an enormous amount of confidence because they learn a skill, they learn a process, they see it work, and they think, I can do it. And it gives them a sense that they can step forward and participate more in the school or in class or in the community. I should just tell you a wonderful story. One of our mediators years ago, 17-year-old girl, got on a public bus, and she was toward the back, and on came a woman who got into a fight with the bus driver. She walked down the length of a city bus and said, "I'm a mediator. I think I can help you."
Oh, my God.
And she was able to mediate the problem, and the bus rolled on. And as far as I'm concerned, that story shows that she knew, she was confident that she had a skill that she could use. And, you know, what more could we ask for our students than something like that?
What a gift. Maxine, what's an appropriate role for parents in peer mediation?
I think supporting their student, if they're chosen to be a mediator, would be number one. Number two is that a parent needs to ask their student, what are you learning? What kind of techniques are they teaching you? And realize that the student's probably going to try them out at home. Mm-hmm. And be aware that the response that a parent gives a new mediator is going to be important. We have a number of students, and I think it's very common, they start teaching their friends and they start teaching their parents. And they'll come back to school and they'll talk about, well, we were sitting around the dinner table last night and my little brother and sister got in trouble and they started squabbling back and forth. And so I just tried my techniques on them and I tried sending I messages. I tried reflective listening and it worked.
Aww.
It really worked. Maybe a little bit touchier if the students are trying it on their parents when their parents
yes.
are having something that needs to be mediated. But they do that too. And I think parents need to have just patience and realize that anybody learning any new skill wants to try it out and realize that this is something that's going to be life learning. It's not just for now, it's forever.
Is this the kind of thing that you would recommend that parents learn?
Absolutely. If they're interested in taking any kind of training in peer mediation, it's a skill anybody can use anywhere. And you never know when it's going to happen. If it can happen on a bus, it can happen at the mall, it can happen at church, sure. It can happen anywhere.
Can I just add, though, I want to say that I think that there's something about mediation that ought to be clear. Mediation is a process which puts together a lot of conflict resolution skills. It's difficult to learn. It's not easy, although when you see someone do it well, it looks easy. Oh, I could do that, you think, and it's harder than it looks. And it's important to know it's not readily available often, the training. Maxine and I were both lucky. She was in a school system which encouraged it, and I got a lot of good, solid training from the Center for Dispute Settlement. But the conflict resolution skills that you need in order to be a good mediator, anyone can learn anytime, almost any place. I say that because I would be concerned about parents saying, I'm just going to go out and learn mediation. Because that may be more difficult than picking up conflict resolution skills.
That's an important distinction I think we need to make.
How are peer mediators trained, Kathy, and by whom?
One of the things about mediation is it's a very flexible instrument. You can use it in many different ways, and I say that because every school has its own culture and will develop its own way of doing things. You can do it everywhere from bringing in outsiders. Many community mediation programs have gotten involved with schools and come in and train mediators. You can train teachers or administrators in a school to train, as Maxine does, to train their students. You can bring in other programs. That there are several national programs that are interested in bringing mediation to anywhere in the country. You can call one of them in. There's the RCC program in New York, Resolving Conflict Creatively program in New York, which will come into any community and teach teachers and so forth. So there are a lot of different ways of doing it. You do need, I believe, someone who does know about mediation, who has mediated. I get very uncomfortable with having people train mediation who have never mediated and don't. No, it is an interesting skill because it's one you don't understand until you get into it. And you don't know what it's going to be like until you've actually done it. And you need some experience, I think, before you're training students.
Maxine, what are some examples of the kind of language that children need to employ in mediation?
I alluded to some common language that most peer mediators know. I messages, reflective listening, those kinds of techniques. When I say I messages, we're talking about I feel, I think, I wish, I heard.
As opposed to you better.
Yeah. As opposed to you better do this, why don't you do this? If you would only do this, then this would happen. And that is a message that immediately puts people on the defensive. When you say, I think this is what is happening, this is what I see is happening, that's not very controversial, because they can't argue with what you are seeing, what you are feeling. And when you put it in the I form, you take it out of the realm of argument and you just share information. That's what you're trying to get, a more neutral strategy that de-escalates really explosive feelings that are around an issue.
I think the important thing about iMessage is to realize is that what it is, instead of blaming the other person or criticizing the other person for what they're doing, you're saying, this is what the impact is on me. The impact on me is to frustrate me, or the impact on me is to make it harder for me to do my job. And people are able to listen better because they're not, as Maxine said, put on the defensive. They're not being challenged and made to feel that they have to fight back.
You used a term, I think, reflective.
Reflective listening.
What is that, please?
If I were reflectively listening to Kathy, I might say, I hear that you want to take the steam out of an argument, and that's where you're using iMessages. Or I might reflect, and I hear that you're curious about the techniques of peer mediation, and you want to know more about that. Sometimes you just say a one word reflective, you know, if you're saying, oh, I wish that somebody would stop. And you say, you really want them to stop. That's all. You didn't say why. You didn't say how they could stop. You didn't say they better stop. You just reflected what your request was or what you think you heard. Then the respondent has a chance to say, no, that's not what I mean. Or, yes, that's it. So you give them a chance to hear that you are listening and that you're getting it right, or to question, no, that's not what I said, or at least that's not what I meant. And they get a chance to clarify it, so it takes it out of the realm of argument.
Kathy, how long does it take for a peer mediation session to be resolved? Is there any standard period of time, or can they go on and on and on?
No, there's no standard period of time. It really can be anywhere between 10 minutes and 2 or 3 hours. And it depends on the complexity of the problem, the number of people involved, how long this feud, as the kids often call it, has been going on, how deep it is, and it takes as long as it takes, usually between half an hour and an hour, if one had to pinpoint it.
Is there ever a time when a session has to be stopped temporarily and we'll continue tomorrow because there's too much?
Yeah. One of the things that I hope comes up in this, and we'll bring it up right now, is that school is difficult because there are time limits. It's often hard for an administrator, for instance, to take the time out, or a teacher to find the time. And so you may have to say, yes, I see we're getting somewhere. Let's come back to this tomorrow and meet. One of the things that I have found is the kids are willing to wait. And very often, and often I've had people wait as long as 2 weeks. People who were kind of hot, and I've said, look, I can't get to it now, but do you think the two of you can agree not to take this any further until we can mediate? Sometimes I'll even sign it, we'll write it up and sign an agreement. We won't take this any further until we can mediate. It is a way, an honorable way out. I don't believe that there are any students in the whole, I don't give me the worst, toughest, baddest person who really want to fight. They don't feel often that they have any other choices. So they get themselves sort of geared up and ready to go. But if there's an honorable way not to go forward with something which is extremely uncomfortable and in this day and age gets more and more dangerous, they will take it and wait. So you can have more than one session. You can have more than one mediation between a group of people, because in the first one you may not have gotten to the bottom of what the problem was. And so that something may come up again and you may need to go back. But that's part of its flexibility, I was saying earlier. You can use this in any way that you want.
Well, I have to disagree with you there. I think there are times when kids do want to fight. And then on the scene, you're not going to talk about peer mediation. You're going to talk about safety. You're going to talk about separation of the parties, that kind of thing. I think also that peer mediation is not a panacea for everything. It's like democracy. It's the best tool we've got, but it's not perfect. And I think we would make a mistake to throw everything to peer mediation. It just society is not going to be that accepting of this technique. I do think it does offer the most permanent resolution of a problem. We can stop a feud between two eighth graders and their gangs and all the friends. We can stop that. We can put it on ice. We can hold it. But if you want to really resolve the problem, you do need to get to the talking out stage where kids can find their own solutions. So I'm not saying it is the most efficient, but it is probably the most permanent in resolving difficulties. Yeah.
Kathy, how effective is peer mediation in violence prevention? Actually, I'd like to ask this question of both of you. And if there are any examples you could cite, we'd appreciate them too.
Well, I'd love to tell a story which happened the second year that I was involved in peer mediation at a junior high school, which I think shows the permanence of the solution rather than the expedience of it. But there were six girls who had been feuding for 6 or 8 months. They had been suspended, they had been followed, they had been lectured at, their parents had been brought in, they had every possible use that there was of a disciplinary form. But it had gotten to the point still, with all of that sort of ammunition brought on the problem, that the teachers were having problem teaching the class. Because there was so much tension every time these girls, they were all in the same classroom, every time they walked by each other, the whole class was going, ooh, fight, fight. I mean, it was just very, very tense.
It had a life of its own.
It certainly did have a life of its own and threatened to break into violence all the time, more violence. Finally, the principal said to me, here, you take this, you and your peer mediators, and you can fail at it, she said. And I said, all right, I will.
Vote of confidence.
Yeah.
We went into a room with these six girls and two mediators. There was one girl that scared me, not because physically scared me. I didn't think she was going to do anything that way, but she seemed so determined not to let this process work. But the mediators were wonderful. They were very neutral. They kept encouraging them to talk, and it was sort of three on each side, a principal and two friends who were watching their back, so to speak. And as they began to talk, the groups began to break up a little, and one of the friends would say, well, I have no problem with you. It's just that I've been defending my friend. And as it went along, more and more, this thing began to be picked apart. Now, a very important piece of this was that the kids were able to vent. They were brutally honest with one another and would say, I don't like you. I don't like the way you do this. I don't like the way you do that. It was a lot of that. It turned out to be terribly important for them to be able to say those things in a safe place. Eventually, as we worked through this, as the mediators worked through this problem, they discovered that, in fact, a year or so earlier, one of the girls had overheard this principal that she was fighting with, say something to a friend that she thought was telling a really important secret. When the girl who was accused heard this, she said, what? You know, that was, and no, I didn't say that. And the one who was accusing had never said to her, what did you say? She had just assumed that this secret, which she felt very tender about, had been told. That is what had started it. When they realized that it had been a total misunderstanding, a total miscommunication, I mean, really never seen a room kind of dissolve the way they did. The girl that I'd been so worried about said, she said, I'm going to do something and you're all going to be really, really, really surprised. I am going to ask that we all shake hands. Well, they all ended up hugging and crying and kissing and continued to be friends all through high school. The girl who had been so tough in the beginning turned to me and said, I want to be a mediator. I trained her as soon as I could. It literally, what she said to me later, and she said to someone who wrote a magazine article about this, this changed my life. And it really did. And there are many stories like that. In that sense, it stopped violence, absolutely. And I think that it's important use in the school because it teaches. I often work with the seventh graders who are just coming into a junior high school situation. They are very ill at ease. They don't know what to do. They're very quick to want to fight, to establish territory. And as I work with them and show them other ways, or they go through mediation and learn other ways of resolving things, it really does cut down on the number of incidents when they are ready to fight one another.
Are there any issues that you feel parents should really know about that we haven't covered with peer mediation?
I think one of the most powerful places that you can use peer mediation is between parents and students, and we find our students come back and tell us that, you know, my mom and I were having an argument, and right in the middle of it, I thought, what are we doing here? Why are we talking like this to each other? And I started reflectively listening, and she didn't even know I was using it. But it was great, and we finally got to the point where we could talk to each other and got this thing resolved. Now, I didn't get grounded, so that was good for me, too. So there is, as someone has said earlier, an empowering feeling that goes with this that the students take with them, and I think they take with them beyond the school and beyond the time that they're even in school, where they say, yes, I can see this conflict rolling. I can see I'm going to be in trouble, but I can handle it. Any time where anger can be de-escalated, it seems to me, we have moved young people and parents into a whole new arena where they can talk to each other and interact with each other in respect and in admiration of each other's skills. Anytime we move that, we have accomplished a lot.
I'd like to add that I would like a plea here on the air that all parents who are listening to this go to your school and demand a peer mediation program or conflict resolution, knowing that it can be brought in a variety of different ways. It can be a whole school approach where there's a thing called the peaceable schools where literally everybody in the school is trained in conflict resolution skills, and it filters down and it gets involved in the cafeteria workers and the security and so forth. Or you can bring in a little band of mediators who are kind of doing a community service for the school to begin to spread the word. So that there are lots of different ways, and there's no real reason for any school not to have a program like this. I think it is not being taught in greater society. When I think about the movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger as the father, I've forgotten the name of it, Jingle Bells, where he can't find an action figure for his son. He's the good guy, and he uses nothing but violence in order to get his way. It's scary. These kids need more exposure to conflict resolution skills, and the school seems to me the place where it ought to be.
Are there out-of-school situations where peer mediation can be put to good use?
Yes, I have a favorite story. I was training at a high school, and one of the students, whom I remember well, he was very eager to tell people what to do, which is one of the things you don't do in mediation. One of the things a mediator doesn't do is give advice or tell the parties what to do. And it took us quite a while to try to persuade him of that. And the training broke over a weekend, and he came back the next Monday. And he was so excited, his feet were not touching the ground. And he said, Mrs. Owen, it works. It's wonderful. And I said, well, tell me what happened. And he said, well, my sister is about to have a baby. And the father was refusing to help. So I got them on the phone together. And I mediated. And he said, and I didn't tell them what to do. I honestly didn't tell them what to do. But I got them to talk about how they, you know, how they viewed this situation and what they wanted. And finally, he agreed to pay half. Isn't that wonderful? And I thought, yes. Isn't that wonderful?
We are sure glad that this is a place where we could talk about it. And we'd like to thank our guests, Dr. Maxine Cunahan and Kathy Owen, for their insight and expertise. You've given a lot of parents a brand new perspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective.
Are there topics you would like to hear about on this program? Do you have tips for other parents? If you would like to send comments, questions, or suggestions to Parents Perspective, you can call us toll-free at 800-791-8573, 800-791-8573. You can email us at parentsper@aol.com. or contact us, care of this station. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.